service. Two ladies that have come tonight to share their experience on part of our book and the chapter of Vision for You, pages 152 and 153. And we'll start off with Taryn from Ireland. She will start off, and then after about 20, 25 minutes, then we have, we got a brain moment here. Judy from Colorado. So I'm going to turn it over to them. And welcome. Taryn, you're on.
Ellie, thank you so much. I'm actually just setting my timer for 25 minutes. My friend Denise from Ireland is on, and she's well aware that I came to prattle on. So hi, everyone. Thanks so much for having me. My name's Taryn. I am an alcoholic. My home group is the Belfast Recovery Group. We're at the minute an online group, which I'm delighted about, by the way. I found recovery during the pandemic. And if it wasn't for the Zoom meetings or the online meetings, I think I would have been in deep trouble. I might say that I've never been to a live meeting. So this is quite an interesting experience for me to see you all in a live meeting. Anyway, I'm going to do a bit of reading and then we can go on. I'm recovered. I live in steps 10, 11, and 12. I have a sponsor. I do service and I sponsor other people. So I'm going to start at the top of page 152. We know our friend is like a boy whistling in the dark to keep up his spirits. He fools himself. Inwardly, he would give anything to take a half dozen drinks and get away with it. He will presently try the old game again, for he isn't happy about his sobriety. Cannot picture a life without alcohol. Someday he will be unable to imagine life either with alcohol or without it. Then he will know loneliness, such as a few do. He will be at the jumping off place. He will wish for the end. We have shown how we got out from under. You say, yes, I'm willing, but am I to be consigned to a life where I shall be stupid, boring, and glum? Like some righteous people I see. I know I must get along without liquor, but how can I have your significant substitute? Yes, there is a substitute, and it's vastly more than that. It is a fellowship in Alcoholics Anonymous. There you will find release from care, boredom, and worry. Your imagination will be fired. Life will mean something at last. The most satisfactory years of your existence lie ahead. Thus we find the fellowship, and so will you. How is that to come about, you ask? Where am I to find these people? You're going to meet these new friends in your own community. Near you, alcoholics are dying hopelessly like people in a sinking ship. If you live in a large place, there are hundreds. High and low, rich and poor, these are future fellows of Alcoholics Anonymous. Among them, you will make lifelong friends. You will be bound to them with new and wonderful ties, for you will escape disaster together, and you will commence shoulder to shoulder your common journey. Then you will know what it means to give of yourself, that others may survive and rediscover life. You will learn the full meaning of love thy neighbor as thyself. It may seem incredible that these men are to become happy, respected, and useful once more. How can they rise out of such misery, bad repute, and hopelessness? The practical answer is that since these things have happened among us, they can happen with you, should you wish them above all else, and be willing to make use of our experience, we are sure they will come. The age of miracles is still with us. Our own recovery proves that. Our hope is that when this chip of a book is launched on the world, tired of alcoholism, defeated drinkers will seize upon it. To follow its suggestions, many we are sure will rise to their feet and march on. They will approach still other sick ones, and fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous may spring up in each city and hamlet, havens for those who must find a way out. That's as far as I'm going to read. Because I figure the first paragraph that I read And then the second last paragraph that I read pretty much will give an indication about my story. So there's me. Inwardly, he would give anything to take a half dozen drinks and get away with them. He will presently try the old game, for he isn't happy about his sobriety. He cannot picture life without alcohol. Someday, he'll be unable to imagine life either with it or without it. Then he will know loneliness such as few do. He will be at the jumping off place. He will wish for the end. So that was pretty much me up until about, well, almost 2 years ago. I have to ask my sponsor to give me my exact sobriety date, because I usually, I'm going to say I lie about it. It's not on purpose, but I can never remember whether it was June or July. So I actually asked him the other day, I was like, when? What is my birth date, my sobriety date? And he confirmed. It's the 19th of July, 2021, is when I came back into the rooms. I drank alcoholically for 40 years. I will be turning 53 in September and will celebrate my third sober birthday. Pretty much. You know, for 40 years, I was drunk every year on my birthday. I started drinking when I was 10. My first drink was a double brandy and Coke. I was given the drink by my uncle, who gave that same drink to my two cousins and to my brother, his three nieces and nephew. And they didn't like the taste of alcohol. I, on the other hand, I was 10 years old, drank that entire glass down and felt the angels sing, because I had that noisy head. I was angry. I think I came out of the womb showing the world an up sign and going, hey, here I am. I was just pissed, man. But alcohol solved that problem for me. I think, like Bill Wilson, alcohol solved a lot of problems for me. It gave me calmness when I was wild. It gave me some sort of social outlet when I needed to communicate with people in a way that didn't seem weird. Made me feel like I was part of the world and not something different from the world, because I always felt different. Alcohol gave me something else. It gave me some sort of self-esteem that I didn't have. I was able to pretty much get through the world and fake a lot of it. From the outside looking in, I guess people would have said that I was pretty successful. Certainly studied. I worked in an investment bank. I was one of the few female derivative traders. And I partied like the boys, except I partied harder than the boys. So in my life, you could improve your career in one of two ways. One was sleeping your way to the top, and the other one was drinking your way to the top. And because I could consume more tequila than most other human beings I know, they respected my drinking, and that helped a lot. Alcohol also meant that I thought I was lovely, but the rest of the world probably didn't think so. I've been married and divorced 3 times. I have an incredibly unmanageable way of living life before the program. I had a way of making all my problems be the fault of somebody else. I could absolutely manipulate the world if I wanted to. In 2016, I woke up one day and said to my husband at the time, I was in Cape Town in South Africa, and I said, well, I'm going to Ireland for 3 weeks. And he was like, what are you going to do in Ireland? I was like, I'm going to find a job, a house, and put my kid into a school, child at the time. I have an autistic child, so I needed to get them into an autistic unit. And it was like, nobody does that in 3 weeks. I said, I'm going to do it. I arrived in Ireland on the 1st of June, got back to South Africa on the 17th of June. And by the 30th of June, I was living in Ireland. I left my husband. I left my three older children behind. I brought the autistic one to Ireland and I lived on my own. Full of selfishness. And I would have told anybody who listened, I was doing it for the benefit of my autistic child to get them out of South Africa. Well, that's not why I did it, if I'm being honest. I was just running away from my shit. I think I'd created so much drama. I needed to get away from my family. I just didn't want to be married anymore. I just wanted to be left alone. When the pandemic hit, I started really drinking. I was drinking, for the last years of my drinking, I was drinking a bottle of gin and a bottle of wine every night. But now I'd come to that drop-off point where I couldn't imagine life with or without alcohol. I knew I needed to stop drinking. I didn't know how I was going to do it. And all of a sudden, alcohol just didn't work for me. And then no matter how much I tried to stop drinking, I couldn't. And no matter how much I drank, I could no longer drown out the sounds of the shit going on in my head. I was a blackout drunk. I didn't know it at the time because clearly I would be awake and I'd be talking to people, but I just could remember nothing. I swallowed a lot of sleeping pills in front of my autistic child. I would nearly have died in front of them. And people are always shocked that I could have done that, specifically given that, remember, I was in Ireland and my family were all in South Africa. So it was just me and my autistic child on their own. They wouldn't have had anybody to phone. They wouldn't have had anybody to help. People always go, oh my God, that's so awful. I go, yeah, but you want to know what the really awful part of it is? When I woke up the next day, the only way I could drown out my guilt was to carry on drinking. That's the part that always gets me. Didn't stop me from drinking, mind you. I carried on drinking for another 6 or 7 months before I hit that drop-off place, that jumping-off place. Then he will know loneliness such as few do. He will be at that jumping-off place. He will wish for the end. I couldn't live. I didn't know how to. But clearly, I wasn't really good at the dying part either. That's where my higher power comes into play. So that's my alcoholism. Yes, I am an alcoholic. And I always tell people, I'm nothing better or worse than anybody in the room. See, I don't know where anybody is in their journey. But if you're in the rooms, and if you're a real alcoholic, I can say that there's one thing on which we all absolutely agree. None of us can take that first drink or the drink without kicking off this craving. The phenomenon of craving, alcoholics are bodily and mentally different from our fellows. So the phenomenon of craving that comes when we have a drink. When we get out of our spree, which in my case was like I was in a 24-hour spree, that mental obsession. I would wake up frantically looking for the drink that I kind of knew there was none because I would always drink until it was finished. But I'd still wake up every morning hoping against hope that there was some and there never was. Then the mental obsession would kick in. What time? The bottle store's only opening at 10 a.m. It's 6 a.m. How am I going to make it till 10 a.m.? Not that I was going to drink at 10 a.m. I just needed the alcohol in the house so that I could feel safe, so that I could have a drink when I wanted a drink. How am I going to hide it from my bosses? Are people going to be able to tell that I'm drinking? Is it in the fridge? Let me go fetch it. Can that again? Eventually, I was just having the dialer service, the dialer drinks being delivered because I couldn't go out and fetch it. Then I feel so guilty. I feel so useless. If I have a drink, it's going to fix it. But hold on, I can't drink because it's going to make me feel worse. But I know a drink will fix that. That deluded, twisted thinking that we as alcoholics have that only another alcoholic will understand. Next part of alcoholism. What the book refers to as the spiritual malady. I was spiritually bereft. I was lonely. I was so full of self-centeredness, self-selfishness, self-loathing, self-pity, self-doubt. Man, the only way to say it, and I don't know about swearing in this meeting, but let me just say my life was a fuck show. And I didn't know how that was ever going to come up. I come into the rooms, I get a sponsor, someone who's armed with the facts about themselves. He understands his alcoholism, knows who he is, and he's worked the steps. And he takes me through this book. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Are you serious? And he's like, let there be no doubt, this is a spiritual program. Right there, my ears shut. I didn't want to hear that. I just wanted to know how to drink in a way that wouldn't kill me. And now I'm told, you've got to get a higher power, the God of your own understanding. I didn't like that word, God. I didn't like it at all. For me, my spiritual growth has been one of, as the, the appendix, where it talks about the spirituality, has been that of the educational variety. My higher power, to be found deep within myself, I was willing to believe that there was something greater than myself, as they say in step two. Step three, I was willing to hand my life over to the care of this God of my own understanding. I didn't know what that meant. I didn't know what that meant. Steps 4 through 9 were where I finally started understanding what the spiritual program is. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness, the book will tell us, are the essentials of recovery, but we can't get away from them. I needed to be willing to go to places that I'd never been before. Step 4 for me was one of those places where we start doing our inventory, and that means I was going to have to be completely honest with myself. It's going to stop looking at the world in a way that made me either seem like the victim or the hero, because trust me, I was never the villain. And I was never anywhere in between. I was either the victim or I was the hero. Whenever I told the story, it was a very extreme story. My narrative was binary. But none of that was true either. See, I had to put everything aside. And as the book says, even if I'm not 100% right, and I never was, by the way, when I did my inventory, as it turned out, I was seldom right. But even if I was only 2% in the wrong, I had to be able to and willing to put aside the 98% that somebody else had done to me and look at just that 2% and say, what was my behavior? Now, the book tells us that we step on the toes of our fellows that someday places us in a position where we can be hurt. My inventory showed me that I was doing a lot of stepping on toes. A lot of stepping on toes. And then I came into the rooms, and so I start working the steps. Do my step 4, do my step 5. It was hell. It was hell. The steps, when they're done, and they're done with vigor, this paragraph, should you wish them above all else? I wanted recovery above all else. I really did. That meant I needed to be willing to do the work above all else. So I was pretty brutal with myself. By the way, my sponsor kicked my ass through the program. He was pretty brutal as well. I wasn't given any sort of hugging and caring and whatever. Because he knew that for me, self-pity would kill me. He might as well have given me a bottle. So I didn't get that. What I got was the truth from somebody who could see through my crap. Why could he see through my crap? Because he was an alcoholic. God, look at these people in the rooms. These happy, joyous, and free people, and I bear these little resentments against them and go, oh my God, you're so fake. It can't be like that. How can you be like you are if you're not drinking? Don't believe it for a minute. Bunch of fakers. Oh, they're only getting it because of religion, and I have all these like thoughts in my head. And then I realize they're only getting it because they're free, safe and protected. You know, that's what happens in step 10. Safe and protected. Having just made conscious contact with God, it is not probable that we will be inspired at all times. We might pay for this presumption and all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. Nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, be more and more on the plane of inspiration. We come to rely upon. That's kind of what's happened to me. Inspiration and intuitive thought when I'm anxious. Relax and take it easy. I don't struggle. I just like hand it over to my higher power. So this paragraph, how am I doing on time? Yeah, 4 minutes. It may seem incredible that these men are to become happy, respected, and useful once more. How can they rise out of such misery, bad repute, and hopelessness? The practical answer is that since these things have happened among us, they can happen with you, should you wish them above all else. And be willing to make use of our experience. The age of miracles was still with us, and recovery has proved that. I did the steps. You know, this is the spiritual program of action. Faith without works is dead. So these are all the things I'm telling you from the book. I have to do the work. I have to live on all three sides of the triangle. That means I need to do service. I need to sit with the recovery, and that's where I'm doing my own steps. And I have to work, it's service, recovery, and fellowship. So my service, my fellowship with the meetings, my recovery. I do service all the time. I know that when I'm feeling crap, when everything else doesn't work, vigorous work with another alcoholic will surely save the day. If I'm having the worst day possible and I'm taking another sponsee through the book, all of a sudden my day is made better. The spiritual program of action is the one thing that I guess has taught me what it means when they say love and tolerance is our code. Because I have a mirror placed up against, you know, put to me almost on the daily that says, can't judge this person because a few years ago, I was worse. I was worse. I was a complete loony tune, mad as a box of rocks. In 3 years, I was locked up for 105 days. 21 days at a time, and I was put away under lock and key. 5 times in 3 years for my own safety and the safety of people around me. The fact that I've been restored to sanity, to me, is a miracle because people had washed their hands off of me. I've got family members that will never speak to me again. They've not wanted to let me make amends to them. My sister being one of them. I don't blame her. I did that. But what I get to do is practice these principles in all my affairs. My children today are safe and protected because I'm safe and protected. When the autistic one came home from school the other day, and it was so sweet because Jay just hears me on all these AA calls, and friends of his were fighting, and he said, I need to go and meet my friends. I was like, why? Because they're fighting. They need to make amends to each other. I mean, how gorgeous is that, you know? These kids are being raised in a way that shows love and tolerance. They're being raised in a way that says it's not cool to judge people. They're being raised in a way that says even the most downtrodden can recover if they're willing to do the work. If you want recovery above all else, it will happen. It's a cast iron guarantee. How do I know that? Because it happened for me. And 2 years ago, somebody would have been well within their rights to lock me away and take my children away from me because I was mad. I'm no longer spiritually bereaved. I have a higher power to be found deeper than me. What I also have is I have true friends in AA that I've never had before, one of whom, my lovely Denise, has dialed in from Belfast Recovery Group to have a late night with her mate, which I'm really grateful for. You know, shoulder to shoulder. Spearhead of God's ever-advancing creation. Saving an alcoholic day by day. Or sharing our experience, strength, and hope so that other people aren't alone. What more could I want? It's an amazing way of life. And I'm really grateful to have it. And Billy, I'm going to end there because I've just about gone over time. And I thank you so much. And Judy, over to you. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, going on. Hi.
Yes.
Hi, everybody. I'm Judy. I'm an alcoholic. And I just want to say thank you. What a lovely, lovely share from the heart and from your experience. And it was beautifully done. Thank you for that. I really share some things and not others, which is the story of Alcoholics Anonymous, right? We always enjoy each other's stories because we find places where we connect and then places where someone else connects. But we generally share together this kind of goofy thinking. So I really want to start by saying thank you to the folks that put this together and do the service work to make this possible. I love the fact that I can be listening to someone from South Africa by way of Ireland at a meeting in Virginia, and I'm sitting in Colorado and my screen has wolves and all kinds of things on it. I'm like, how did you get this anywhere else? I mean, I think the rest of the world is deprived. On the other hand, the price you have to pay to get here is probably worth that seat you're sitting on, right? So my sobriety date is August 17th, 1982. And also I do have a sponsor. I've had only a few actually in that period of time. My sponsor is a woman who's got 45 years of sobriety, lives in another state. I don't get to see her very often. And at 87 years old is still active in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. So how beautiful is this life, right? I get to watch her show me how to do the next step in life. It's really quite fabulous. Unlike our lovely Taryn, I did not get this at 2 years sober. You know, it was all I could do not to still be hitting on every boy in the room and looking for approval and appreciation from everybody who was around me. You know, I was a flaming idiot. I don't think I began to get my act together until, it's a different story. I won't go into all of that now, but I don't think I began to get my act together until I was invited into a big book study at 7 years of sobriety. So I would tell you my sanity date looks more like 1989, because that was when we started down this journey of taking the book word by word, paragraph by paragraph, and sentence by sentence, and outlining them. And several times since, I've had things happen that helped me. One of the things somebody suggested a few years ago was to go through the book and just for my own sake to take highlighters and start marking off which things were promises and what are and what are instructions and which of those things are, there's three or four things that I like to keep with. What are principles, for example? Because we always talk about principles, but we never identify what they might be to each other. So there's all those things that in our AA jargon, we forget to talk about. So today I have this book that's filled with multitudes of colors because I always forget what color I used last. And I just kind of have this rainbow effect in my book of marking things that seem outstanding to me. So I want to talk a little bit about this passage in general, if I may. Bill wrote this chapter first, I understand. That doesn't appear first in the book, but he wrote it first. And I think that might be kind of a significant thing. Bill was writing out in this burst of Billy Wilson enthusiasm, his experience of what happened, what he was like, and what the program is like now. What the program is like and what it was. All three things that we do when we tell our personal stories, in a way, Bill's kind of doing in this chapter. He's recapping the things that we do all the time. So how was it? What happened? And then how are we like today as an organization? And there are people who would tell you that we're better than we were. There are people who will tell you, oh my God, we're about to fall off the cliff. And I don't know, I'm not God, but I think we're probably just as defiant and rambunctious today as we were way back when. I think that seems to be a symptomatic characteristic of alcoholics in general. You know, we invite people into service and then we beat them to death the whole time they're doing that job. You know, we do that all the time. And I've been on both sides of that. So I get it. The part that you were talking about originally that you read about this alcoholic who's sober, who's not quite convinced of his powerlessness over alcohol, that I see as the root of our problem. The root of our problem with among ourselves as an organization seems to be about the question that comes up for several people. Am I an alcoholic today? Oh yeah, I got 10 years, I got 5 years, I got 15 years, I got 27 years. Am I an alcoholic today? And I think that's a really valid question for each of us to be asking ourselves when at home and with our creator and maybe in meditation or looking at each other in the eye, am I an alcoholic today? What does that mean? Because alcoholism lives within me. It is not like I have a pill that I stop taking. I had those too. But when I stopped taking them and recovered from them, I was done with them. But I am really an alcoholic, and that without the treatment of my alcoholism by the program, I revert to all kinds of internal places that aren't positive. I return to stinking thinking. I return to crisis management, overdramatization, hurting those that I most love most of all, sabotaging jobs, and not keeping my commitments. So how's that for a short laundry list? That's kind of where I go back and I see the world with a negative tilt all the time. It's where, and I see that today as the advancement of internal alcoholism left untreated. It's like, oh, she's back one more time. One more time, she's come alive. And what manages that on a daily basis are the things we're going to talk about in this particular part of A Vision for You. Because Bill talks about it, you know, as the mystery that it is, that we're not exactly magic. We're closer to miracle. because magic is kind of a game of illusion. And one of the things that's been hardest for me to learn to undo in my sober life is my tendency towards self-illusion or delusion. And in order to overcome that, my tendency to make things something they really are not, or not make things something they really are, which is more like it with me. In doing that, I live in a life where the biggest lies I tell are those I tell myself. Once I understand, I'm usually pretty good with you, by the way. It's just how I am. I haven't got sense enough to think fast enough. So when I understand something, you know it 20 minutes later. But as long as I can lie to myself, I have a deceptive game going on that keeps me running. And until I get to seeing it differently, to get the spiritual aspect of this program to affect my mind, I'm running in ongoing alcoholism. It's just my thinking of what we've got here. So Bill starts with this promise on page 152, the promise of, I will inwardly want to take a drink. In me, it looks like I want out of here. I want out of my own discomfort. I don't think I want a drink. I think I want out. That's my first symptom. I want out of my skin, out of this place, out of being around you, out of my thinking. Because normally I live in a place where I'm pretty comfortable. And that's kind of what the vision for me has been. When I drank, it took me out of me. And when I don't drink, if I don't work a program or things kick me back into old thinking, and instead of going to look at my sixth step a little more deeply, what I do is I entertain old ideas, I have the possibility of reaching that same bottom. And I know that with people that have got some good long years of sobriety, many people have said, I'm wishing for the bottom. Because I can't picture my life today without a solution. I'm in AA and I still want to die. And I'd like to bring that just to this thoughtful group. There are plenty of people with long-term sobriety who still, when confronted with life, or today when confronted with life, have lost the tools of the program and the ability to do what Taryn was talking about, get in, dig deeper, and find your fellowship. Because without that, at any level of sobriety, there's no guarantee that your thinking, your alcoholic thinking, doesn't ride up alive and well and anxious to take your little butt to the cleaners, right? That's at least been my experience. So I can get to the jumping off place. I can wish for the end. Bill gives us this promise that you will get there. He didn't say when. He doesn't say that those who suffer that we're carrying the messages to are those that are here for their first 2 weeks of sobriety. The alcoholic who still suffers might be the one that's sitting next to you with 22 years. So pay attention to the eyes. Because it's the eyes that tell you every time. Are they gone dead? Are they avoiding themselves and others? What am I doing with that, you know? I would like us to be aware of our fellows, because it is in our fellowship that we find the substitute. So Bill finds us at a promise that we will have a bottom, and then he has a promise of recovery, the substitution of the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's a partial solution. I'm going to find release. I'm going to have my imagination. My imagination last week, I'll tell you where my imagination went last week. I had a little cancer cell on one of my eyelids, and I had breast cancer over the holidays. So it's been a year full of things. And at the same time, I didn't know it, but I was nursing the last days or the beginning days of an abscess tooth. So here I am. I got an eye and a tooth and recovering from breast cancer radiation. And my imagination was fired. So here's where it went. I have a thing on my eye. It's so small, it's the size of a sty. And I went to the doctor, and the next thing I can picture is what I'm going to look like without an eyelid. And then maybe what I'm going to look like when they actually take the eye out, because surely that's where it's going next, and maybe take my forehead with it. And I'll have to cancel any speaking I do because nobody's going to be able to stand me when I've got no eye and I need a patch and I'm miserable. And I've got, my imagination was fired all over the place. And I had to write all my friends and say, guess where we went today? She's back, you know, guess where we went today? Because it's always an ignoble end or some hilariously awful nightmarish end. And it always stars myself. Always. So Bill has this recovery promise that he has in the same page, 152. He's shortcutting everything to have this vision of what Alcoholics Anonymous is and can be. And is the most satisfactory years of our lives ahead? Well, mine are, because I was able to call or write three or four people and say, here's where it went today. And nobody said, oh, you poor darling. They all went, ha, you know, and if we'd love you if you lost your eye, you know, that it's like, it's a whole different world than it was when I was at the bottom of a pit of a trash dump and life was one disaster after another, because I've had plenty of those. So how is it I find these people? Well, I find them in doing the service work of Alcoholics Anonymous. Starts with being active in my group. Make coffee. Everybody depends on you to make coffee. And on the nights where you don't want to go to meetings, that's the night that you show up in a meeting because you got to make coffee. It's the most important job in AA. And when I was done with doing some bottom feeding kind of service gigs that I thought were important, when I was doing them, the next thing I desperately went for was a service gig so I could make coffee and be a greeter. Because that's where our sobriety is nailed down to the eyeball to eyeball level. Even on Zoom, it's kind of eyeball to eyeball. When I'm sitting in a big room, I'm looking at the back of somebody's head, right? So at least I can see you. I can see your eyes here too. So how do I find these people while I get involved in service? My vision for you is that I am not the person that walked in these doors, but there's like a little spongy alcoholic Judy that lives inside there. And all it takes is a few things to get that going again. And just like that, I'm missing an eye, right? And then it says, we will know the full meaning of love thy neighbor as thyself. Bill talks then and makes another promise. This book is filled with promises. And the promise is that this is going to be self-sacrificing. Because we don't promise you an easy street without the ability to give of yourself. It's the most satisfying thing you will ever know about your life, because all of us, mostly in my case, I spent my life as a pitiful victim. I love pitiful victim. I love self-justified anger and all that stuff too. I love it. And it's my default. I want to turn to that when things happen. However, what you've turned me into is a person who sees promise and not very often victimization anymore. And what I get today is that my sacrifice is that I get to show up when it's inconvenient. And I have a life that is inconvenient. And because it's inconvenient, my life is rich and full of meaning. And as I become this old lady, what I have is a life that has been given to me full of purpose. And I want to say that I think that is probably the most precious thing that life can give me, not God, but life, is a sense of purpose. We live, everybody, whether you're young or whether you're old, needs some vision of themselves as what am I here for? I need a sense of purpose and a sense of meaning that I have lived. And how do I get there? AA offers us a great opportunity. It's to show up at your local, whatever it is, your local workshop. Help somebody else. You don't have to chair anything. That just jump in and say, how can I help? We are an unlimited source of opportunity for people to help each other and continue to grow. And at the same time, everybody who's ever done tried to do a good deed knows that as soon as you show up for a good deed, somebody's got to stab you in the heart with an organic carrot. You know, it's like, you did a good thing. I'm going to tell you all about how you failed. So AA has its challenges. We have our challenges. So I want to tell you, I've got 5 minutes or so, maybe 10. It says it ends this with another promise, which is the age of miracles is still with us. And that is proven by our recovery. So when I read ugly things sometimes and I read where AA is this or AA is that, I go, no, my own recovery proves it differently. Does my life prove it? We have to look at each other and say, would my life show you that life is worth living in Alcoholics Anonymous? So that's why I tell you about those things like my little eye thing, the breast cancer thing. Is my life worth living, no matter as life happens? So in the 40 and almost 41 years that I've been sober, I've lost parents. I've tried to kill my husband. I've tried, that's a different story. I've married that same guy first and didn't divorce him after. And we each have sponsors and we each have a program. And we've had, between us, we have 6 kids. There's always some kind of drama going on. I'm an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And because of that, it keeps me tethered to ground, if you will. I feel like a circus tent with those guy wires down everywhere. No matter where I go, I keep the ropes keep me balanced. So no matter what I'm doing, I tell my sponsees, please don't all leave at once. One of you at a time can leave, because then there's always room for somebody else to come in. But I need that balance of people that I know and the people that know me and trust me, so that together we can reach our hands towards the spirit of the universe that cares for each and every one of us. And Bill is writing that. Is this, should you wish these things above all else? Do I wish it above all else? There are times when the only thing I wished for was him. There are times when the only things I wished for was it or money. How many of us have made money our God at one time or another, or the health of someone else my God at one time, or importance or prestige? It becomes our God. Why do I call it our God? Because it's all I can think about, all I can talk about for a period of time. And the things I talk about and the things I visualize, those become my God, at least temporarily. Till I remember that anything that I put before the God of my understanding, I'm destined to lose. So God has to come first. Our hope is when this chip of a book is launched into the world tide of alcoholism, defeated drinkers will seize upon it to follow its suggestions. Do I read this to follow its suggestions? It's full of suggestions. Many new people who are not here cannot read this book. They can read the stories, because we all understand stories in Alcoholics Anonymous. We all have storytellers in Alcoholics Anonymous, and we get those. Even when they're different than ours, we get them. Many, we are sure, will rise to their feet and march on. They will approach still others, sick ones, and the fellowships of Alcoholics Anonymous may spring up in each city and hamlet. Havens for those who must find a way out. Again, I want to say, I think that those who must find a way out are not only new people. They are often the most unlovable among us, the arrogant old timer who's hanging on by a thread. I've been that occasionally. The person coming out of prison who doesn't look very good, and we're a little bit scared because they haven't yet learned how to sit down and have a meeting with us. The person who is other, whether sexually or racially or class-wise, the person who is other, who needs us, those people are not to be considered as other. They're us. They're our God's other kids. They're our brothers and sisters. And we need them. And because we need them to maintain our own sobriety, our responsibilities reach out to those people that we might not otherwise see. It ends this part of a chapter with suggesting that that there's a story to follow, and that story to follow is about Dr. Bob and Dr. Bill and the founding of this program. We get those examples because A Vision for You is exactly that. The person that I came in here as, angry, so defiant, so unwilling, excuse me, I was an alcoholic who didn't know they were an alcoholic. I would have told you I was a problem drinker with maybe some alcoholic tendencies and didn't understand what alcoholism was. And I put up enough defenses that you never challenged me on that until several years later, somebody suggested maybe I'd like to join it and find out what the fellowship was all about. Lovingly, of course. Spiritual loving looks as much like a foot in the backside sometimes as it does a hand around the shoulder, right? We all have that as our capability, as our possibility, that we can be that person to another person. And I don't have any of those answers, by the way, and this is what I want to confess to you. I sponsor a ton of people. And I get a chance to be out and about, and I've done my service gigs in a lot of different ways. And I have a passion for Alcoholics Anonymous that's brought me so much joy. And in the middle of that, what's important to remember is that every one of us is just another drunk on the bus. And I have been rewarded over and over and over again by everything that has happened, both good and not so good. Every bit of that has been okay when I look back on that. A life which is rich and full of meaning. Which of us would not want that, no matter where we come from, no matter what language we speak, no matter how old or young we are? Do we not want that very same thing? The roofs get nicer. The meals might get better. They might get smaller. Those are things. But all of us want a few things in common. And so for so many of us, we want the love of our fellows. We want to be acceptable to ourselves. We want to sleep okay without hating ourselves when we wake up or when we go to bed. So what I do, and I'll end with this, is what I do is I have meditation, I have prayer, I go through the steps with other people when they do them. We ask lots of questions. I don't believe we have to have a rigid dogma here in AA. Bill was quite clear that it doesn't exist for us, so that most people can find what the job that they and their higher power would have them do together. It's between you and your higher power, not between you and me or you and anybody else. It's between you and your higher power. So what does that bring us to? It brings us to a vision of somebody who comes in stupid, young, under the influence of, I want to have prestige. I want to feel approved, appreciated. I want to be the star. I would tell you that I think everybody in this room, probably given the chance, has an inside secret, let me dance on top of the tables. You know, I want to hide in the corner. I want to be an introvert, but just for a moment, can I be out there and dance on the tables and have everybody's admiring eyes on us? Everybody's kind of like that. We want both things. An extrovert with introvert tendencies, an introvert with extrovert tendencies. We're all those things. We're a goofy bunch. We're a goofy bunch. But the vision is there for each of us. And I think that's what Bill wanted. He wanted to show us a mirror of what is possible, both at its best and its worst. Because on the page before we read, he described the four horsemen. They're right there. Terror, frustration, bewilderment, and despair was right there. So how do you go from that to this? We have a dynamite written program, but we have to live this love. We have to take it out there among ourselves and into the world, because it's not enough to know it and feel it and stay here and hoard it to myself between you and me. I think we are called to love each other. and take the action that love requires. I didn't mean to go into sounding like such a preacher. I really apologize, but it's what happened. Sorry. But for today, I thank you for having me and appreciate very much the opportunity. I'm Judy. I'm an alcoholic.